Got my screen there? There we go. All right. I appreciate our booth guys so much. Everything, as well as that worship team. I was telling somebody out in the foyer earlier, are we blessed or what? We're just this little country church, and such talent, such dedication, good people. Numbers chapter 11. Being friends with coworkers is sort of like having pet tigers. Fun in theory, but you never know when they're going to turn on you. Having coworkers as friends is a little bit like having pet tigers. Fun in theory, but you never know when they might turn on you. Have you ever been turned on? Not turned on as in excited, turned on as in attacked by somebody you trusted. You told somebody something in confidence, they went out and spread it all over and used it against you. A superior took credit for some of the work that you did. A peer did something disgusting but pinned the rap on you. Someone lied to your face and didn't even bat an eye. Perhaps a better question this morning would be, is there anyone here that's never been betrayed, lied about, or lied to? Why is that such a common experience, or why are those such common experiences? It's called human nature. And I hate to tell you this, but you've got one too. We've forgotten about this, but we've probably done those very things to somebody else. The ones we remember are the scars that were left on us, but we've probably laid a few lashes down ourselves. You and I are called to rise above our natural instincts and become godly, holy, pure, and righteous. We're kind of like pet tigers. We've been blessed. We've been brought into the family. And every once in a while, when one of the kids runs across the living room floor, we begin to salivate a little bit. You and I are called to rise above our natural instincts and become godly, holy, pure, and righteous. I don't know if you've ever had pet dogs, but one of the things that you watch your dog for is how they treat your children and your grandchildren. Isn't that right? You may love that dog and maybe be a great dog, but if that dog bites one of the kids, what happens to the dog? You and I have been brought into the family. You and I are called to rise above our natural instincts and become godly, holy, pure. Our natural instinct is to hurt those who hurt us. It's to protect ourselves. God is calling us higher than that. Bless those that persecute you. Love those that despise you. Are you ready to be part of the family? That's what God's calling us to. And a lot has to do with what we do with our lips. Now, this is Numbers chapter 11, the first three verses. Now, the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord and the fire died down. So that place was called Taberah, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. Lord, it's a hard concept for us because all we talk about is the love of God, the love of God, the love of God. He loves you no matter what. But this is your word. And you got so angry at your people that you were ready to barbecue them. You struck up the Barbie. We want to incite your love and your joy, not your anger. Teach us today. Help us to adjust and to change, to be tamed, to be like a member of the family, not just part of the family. And we'll thank you for your help here today in Jesus' name. Amen. What were the people complaining about? What does the text say they were complaining about? They were complaining about their hardships. Their hardships. If you were going to complain about something, where would be the natural place to start? Your hardships, right? Isn't it a human right to complain? Isn't that what you do with hardships? When things get hard, you complain about them. Well, the people have left Egypt. It's been over a year they've been on this journey. And they've been traveling through a desert, or several deserts, actually. There wouldn't be any inconveniences with traveling through a desert, right? If you packed up everything that you needed, everything that you held precious, and you began to trudge it again along a path through a desert, that's good, right? Oh, boy, I can't wait. Sign me up, too. There couldn't be any problems with that, any inconveniences on that journey. Several times they faced lack of water. It is a desert, so there's desert things around, like snakes and lizards and scorpions, spiders. It's a desert. When they camped, there were days, in fact, a whole year they were at Mount Sinai with pretty much nothing to do. Now, there were some people working really hard on building the tabernacle, and they were really going hard at it. But you got maybe 3 million people. They're not all working on the tabernacle. They're just kind of hanging out there. They don't have cell phones. They don't have Super Mario Brothers or what is it that people do play today on their little sets or whatever. For us old guys, solitaire. Yeah, you know, they didn't have that. So there they are. Have you ever moved from one place to another? How'd that go for you? Pretty stressful, right? What if you were in constant moving mode? Okay, we're here for now, but I'm not sure how long. Whenever that cloud moves, that's when we move, but nobody's really sure. Indecision and lots of moving. So the Bible doesn't say there are no hardships. It says the people complained about their hardships. I was musing over that, so I looked up some commentaries to see what other people had to say. And John Gill says, I'm hearing from on high right now. John Gill says these people were looking for something to complain about. They didn't like where they were. They didn't like what was going on. And they were not going to be pleased. Not going to be pleased. Dinner time last night, Kayla and her boys are with us. We've got 3 little boys, 1-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 5-year-old in our household right now. And it's dinner time. And I had a whole smorgasbord set out there. Okay, boys, what would you like to eat? Ice cream. You can have ice cream if you eat this good stuff first. Don't want this stuff. I don't like this stuff. Okay, you choose what you want. Each one chose what they wanted. God. It's amazing what it took to get that food in those little boys. And you can have ice cream as soon as you're done. Grandma has a gift for you as soon as you're done. This broccoli is mushy. I don't want broccoli. You ask for broccoli. If you think it's mushy now, try wearing it for a little while. And boy, you know, just complaining and belly. Oh, you'd have thought we were trying to kill them when we're trying to feed them. Look for something to complain about. They had an agenda. They wanted to go back to Egypt. So there was nothing about the present circumstances that you could get their minds or hearts on that was going to be okay. Anything you pointed out, they pointed out something wrong with it. They had a different agenda than what God, what Moses, what the Lord had intended for them all. Now catch this. They joined this caravan willingly. We're going to the promised land. They hated Egypt when they were in Egypt. Remember, they groaned out to God, can't stand this place, it's too hot, they're being mean to us, there's injustice here. Now that they've been liberated from Egypt, they love Egypt and always have. Oh, you remember when we were back in Egypt, it was such a wonderful place. God must be going, Oy vey, what do I do with these people? Now it's the journey they hate. They couldn't wait to get out of Egypt. Now they hate being out of Egypt. You don't know any people like that, do you? Their hearts are not vested in the promised land. They're longing to go backwards. You will never become happy looking in your rearview mirror. You will never become happy looking in your rearview mirror. The boy said to me the other day, "Grandpa, we want to ride in your Mustang." I said, "Okay, let's go for a ride in the Mustang." So I had two of Kayla's, Colton and Hudson, in the back. We went and we picked up Parker. We got Colton now in the front, Parker and Hudson in the back. They're in these booster seats, you know. We're in the Mustang. And they're all, "Wow, we love the way this thing. Make it roar, Grandpa, make it roar." Okay, if you want to. And so we're making it roar and we're going down. In no time at all, the two in the back seat are on their knees looking out there. "Hey, there's a car coming up on us. You better hurry." I said, "You need to turn around and sit down." Get them to turn around. Next thing I know, "Hey, Grandpa, there's a truck right behind you. You're going to need to turn around and sit down." You'll never be happy looking in the rearview mirror. You got to watch where we're going. If you're always saying, "Oh, where I grew up, that was a great place, you know. What used to have, I would love it if we could just as a nation go back to where we were." If you trust the driver, look forward to where you're going. It is honoring to God when you trust Him. You see, the devil's always speaking to us gloom, doom, and despair. It's going to get worse. It's terrible. It's coming to nothing. And God is always speaking promises into us. Now, who are you going to believe, the gloom and despair of the enemy or the promises of God? But when we're looking in the rearview mirror, we're just like these people. "I want to go back to you. You were not happy in Egypt. Now you want to go back there? Who are you trying to kill? Oh, no, I was so happy. It was such a good time. It was such a good life." No, it wasn't. The best is yet to come. That's the word of faith from God. So these people have an agenda. They want to go backwards. And they can if they want to. There's 3 million people. They don't do a head count at night. They don't look in all the tents. Everybody present. They don't have a fence around this place. They're out in the. If they want to go back to Egypt, they can just peel off and go. Who's going to miss a couple families among so many people? But they don't want to go back alone. They want to turn the whole group around. They want to infect the group with their dissatisfaction. They want affirmation that this is terrible and it needs to change, and they want to turn. Or maybe not. Maybe they just love to complain. I want to sit down here just for a minute in this thought, loving to complain. Isn't that sort of an oxymoron? Because we complain about things we don't like. Why would we want to keep talking about things we don't like? And yet, I know it's true. I love to complain. I'm really good at complaining. I'm not only good at complaining, I'm good at blaming everybody else for things. Even if it's clearly me, I can prove to you that it's you. And get a kick out of doing it at the same time. Complaining can be entertaining. Complaining is tasty to our flesh. Our flesh loves. And I kept thinking about, why do we love so much to complain? Some people, they like to put on the dog and want you to think they're everything. But most of us, we prefer playing the victim. When we complain, we set ourselves up as the victim. I've been hurt. I've been mistreated. And you know what happens when somebody's hurt? It draws attention. It draws sympathy. You ever been watching television and they put one of those commercials on and they've got a dog in a pen and its head is down and it's whimpering. And they said, this dog is suffering unless you send $19 a month. This poor dog is going to continue to look at the dog. Let me show you another. Oh, this one has mange. Oh, have you no mercy on a poor dog? What's wrong with you? Have you noticed how long those commercials are? You know, you got to change the channel for a while to come back. You know, they, yoy. The other day, I was watching Fox News, and they brought this poor old lady, and she has no clean water. This is an Israeli. You're a Christian, aren't you? Aren't we supposed to bless the Jews? And so what are you doing about the impoverished widows in Israel? And I'm thinking, I don't think I'm doing anything about the impoverished widow in Israel. And how do I know I can trust you that, you know, you're going to... But anyway, that's just the way my mind works. And but, you know, normally we love to be the victim. Victim draws attention to it. It draws sympathy to us. Now, there's a difference between being wounded and being a victim. When you are wounded, you need treatment. So I want to draw a distinction here. It's not wrong to tell somebody you've been hurt and go to a hospital and get help so that you know, you can be rehabilitated, especially in your spirit. If you become tainted, if you're in a bad way, if you're complaining, and have somebody come alongside and say, now look, brother or sister, you know, let's talk about what you've been through. Now let's get back to where we need to be. It's not fitting for us to be a fountain of complaining, but rather we were made to be a fountain of praise to our God. And get that back. Be honest with who you are. Be honest with where you're at. But what I'm talking about is crossing over and enjoying dwelling in that land. Not that you're wounded and you're recovering, but that you've settled in. You know what? I like the sympathy that I'm getting. And so I'm going to just be the victim. And I'm going to play that role. Now, verse 1 says, they were complaining about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. Kind of an odd phrase, right? Because how could you not be in the hearing of the Lord? He knows our thoughts and the intents of our heart. They were complaining in the hearing of the Lord. I think it's probable that their complaining became incessant. It became ingrained. It was part of it. To listen to them was to hear them complain. And you may have people in your life that as soon as you see them walking toward you, you go, oh boy. You know, you put earplugs in or you go to a happy place right away. You half hear them because you know what's coming. It's not that they sometimes complain or sometimes have a problem. They've got this dark cloud hanging over them. And they like nothing more than envelop you in their dark cloud. And that becomes contagious. And I think to listen to these people were to hear them complain. It was either too hot or it was too cold. What God was asking was either too challenging or it was too boring. There's nothing to do. And could it be that in the hearing of the Lord meant they brought their complaints on holy ground? They didn't just complain in their tents to one another, but even when they were on their way, the cloud, the pillar of cloud, the very embodiment of God was hanging overhead, and the tabernacle was set up, and the holy furnishings were all in place, and they are coming to this holy place, and they've got nothing on their lips but complaint about everything and everybody and all the way that the ark is in sight behind the curtain, that is, and here they are on their lips is all this complaining. God is leading them from slavery into a beautiful land where they would be free and prosper. But to listen to them, you'd think it was just the opposite. You would think that God had plucked them out of a beautiful, prosperous land and was leading them off into slavery, wouldn't you? By the way, they're complaining and grumbling all the time. It sounds like he's being bad to them, being mean to them, being miserable to them, leading them into bad things. God could deliver them from slavery, but he could not deliver them from their spirit of complaining. That had to be a choice on their part. They had to choose to turn a little switch and say, okay, I'm going to start being reasonable. I'm going to start being thankful. God can't do that to you. God can't do that for you. You have to do that. I have to do that. When I'm miserable, I may have to do some things to take care of some stuff. But ultimately, I have to flip a little switch and say, you know what, God, I'm sorry that I've been so sour lately. We can ask his help in it, but I've got to do something in it. Last night, one of the older boys plucked the toy out of the hand of the baby, and his dad saw it, and he gave him a warning. Pretty soon, it happened over again, and he gave him a warning. Next time it happened, he says, you're going to time. I don't want to go to timeout. Don't send me to timeout. I don't know what happens in timeout, but it must be terrible. And he took his son, and he took him to timeout. And, oh, I don't want to go. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. I warned you 3 times, and now you're going, ah! You know, wow, you know, should I call the police? I don't know. This is amazing here. But you know what? When he came out of the, he was the sweetest little fella. He wasn't taken from his little brother again. And apparently that has to happen every once in a while when you're 5 years old, I guess. Or 45 or 65. It just, you know, you need a timeout. You need an adjustment space where you sit there and think about how you've been acting and what you've been doing. And I guess this is our timeout this morning. How you doing? Is your spirit merry and light? Have you been the Grinch? Have you, people are in my house. They ate my piece of cake. They parked where I park. You know, or, you know, do you need a timeout? Darla will take you to the other room for a little while. You need a timeout? They weren't complaining in Moses' hearing. They're complaining in the hearing of the Lord. They know it's wrong. They're kind of doing. And this becomes group belly aching. It has no positive benefit. We just wallow in it. And complaint kicks up a notch when you find somebody else with the same complaint. Maybe they were happy a minute ago, but you brought up a subject that, oh yeah, I hate that. And all of a sudden, it becomes a stew. It's not just broth now. There's meat in this pot. Others gather around, and we begin to gain momentum. And we begin to wallow together. Pass the mud. Well, what were they supposed to be doing with their lips, especially when they were on their way to the tabernacle? What was supposed to be coming through those lips? Our lips were created to give a sacrifice of praise. That's why we have lips. Worship is the cure for wallowing. Wallowing is a disease. Worship is the cure. Begin to worship and begin to talk about God. Begin to tell him his great qualities. And you can be cured of your complaining and of your sour attitude. Have you heard of the 5 love languages? I think it was Gary Smalley or Smiley that brought those to us and articulated. And I've used this in counseling for quite a while, and I believe this is a valid science here. All of us give and receive love in one of 5 ways. One would be our primary love language. We can understand all of them, but one is our primary love language. And when you get 2 people that speak different love languages, one can be speaking French and the other German. One's trying to love the other, and they don't receive that as love. If your love language is giving and receiving gifts, and somebody doesn't, you know, really appreciate what you gave to them, it really hurts because you're trying to tell them, I love you. And they may be thinking, well, it's just a gift, because that's not their love language. Maybe their love language is quality time. And you spent so much time shopping for that gift, they wondered, what's wrong with you? Don't you want to spend any time with me? And so it can become, and so it, that you can see why we use it in counseling, try to get on the same, this is what they're thinking, this is why, you know, they're feeling that way. And it can become a really good tool. Well, words of affirmation are one of these love languages, and in that, of course, words of affirmation, when you tell them nice things, when you say, you know, I don't just say I love you, but you know what I really like about you? Man, you are so organized. And if it wasn't for you, I would have lost everything by now. And, you know, I just appreciate this about you. And those words make them feel loved. And now, everybody likes a kind word. But when your love language is words of affirmation, it's very important to you. And the one thing that they warn you to not use with a person who that's their loving is criticism. See, it would be like if your love language is physical touch. You know, you love a good hug, you know. They're always touching your arm while they're talking to you. You know, they're expressing love in this way. If you were to physically abuse them, if you were to hurt them, you can imagine that's their love language, but it hurts twice as bad because there's nothing, no stronger language you could use to hurt them. Well, with words of affirmation, it is language. So criticism then hurts where it's supposed to be a love language. Now stick with me on this. God speaks all five love languages fluently, but we know he has an affinity for praise, right? Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. He inhabits the what? Praises of his people. He doesn't inhabit the complaints of his people. He inhabits the praises. Praise draws him right in. We feel his presence. He begins to heal us even while we're worshiping him. Before we even begin to ask about things, our words are so important to God. So what should we avoid? Criticizing God or even the way he's doing things. I don't always like the way God does things, but I trust him. Even in the fire, you know, we sing that in different choruses. Even in the fire, I will sing your praise. I will give you praise. And that affirms God. God feels your love and your trust when you're doing that. So imagine if the people are on their way to the tabernacle. They're on their way to the place of worship. And God said, oh, here they come. My people are gathering. Oh, we're going to have a time this morning. They're going to worship and I'm going to dance over them. And it's going to be, I'm going to bless them. I'm going to heal them. I'm going to prosper. I'm going to speak in there. They're going to go dancing out of here. It's going to be the greatest day they've ever had. Woohoo, can't wait. But what does he hear? What? That's not praise. That's not one of my songs that they're singing. They're grumbling. I hate this man, oh man, I hate this man, you know, dust or desert. Oh, Egypt was such a lovely place. What was a lovely place? Gabriel, my hearing must be gone. Can you believe what these people are saying? Expecting words of love and appreciation, and rightly so. God hears instead ungrateful, spoiled, that wouldn't be any of us, right? Sinister. Hypocrisy, self-righteousness. Self-righteousness will proclaim yourself right even at the expense of God. I know better than God. This is not good. And worse, they sometimes claim that God was up to something no good. He brought us out here just to kill us. They would actually say that. And it was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. Actually, I didn't bring you out here to kill you, but I'm thinking about it. You know? I'm strongly considering it now because of the way that you're acting. God got so angry that he was literally going to burn them alive. Fire from God popped up here, popped up there, and then all around the outskirts of the camp. They started running this way, and then they started running that way, and there was fire everywhere. And so they did what they did before when they ran to Moses. And said, Moses, intercede for us, help us. What's happening here? And Moses prayed, and so the fire died down. It's interesting. intermittently, they complained about and to Moses, and intermittently, they loved the guy. Half the time they hated him, and some of the time they loved him. Isn't that human? We tell our boss, I really appreciate what you did over here. Thank you for providing that for us. You get back to your office with your coworker. What a louse. What a loon. What a maroon. Oh, I buttered his bread so good on the one side, but let's toast him now, huh? God loves when we do that, right? When we're two-faced. We all hate two-faced people. I hate to admit, I got at least two faces. I may have four or five, I'm not sure. It's the human condition. We are called to rise above our natural instincts and become like the God who has called us into the family. Beverly Hillbillies, remember that show long ago? They took their hillbillyism into Beverly Hills. And what's supposed to happen is you live up to the standard that you've been brought in. You don't have to eat possum guts any longer. You can eat caviar. We've been brought into the family. We're not supposed to keep acting like where we came from. We're supposed to tame those emotions and those propensities of our sinful nature, and that brings glory to God. He said, I found this in the ash heap, and I brought it home, and look what I've made out of it. Isn't it beautiful? Isn't it glorious? But that's our natural condition. We smile at out of one side of our face and growl out of the other one. Recently, hurricanes battered the Gulf and Gulf Coast in Florida. Many people lost everything they owned. Some people even lost their lives. A friend of my wife's lives in Florida, and she has terrible physical conditions. She's racked with pain. She's allergic to everything. She had just stepped out of her bedroom for a minute, and a tree came crashing right down through her bedroom, right onto her bed. And she was thankful to be alive. And she called Barb from her hallway on her cell phone. All she had was her hallway. She lived in her hallway for the next several days. 65% of Florida was without power for days on end, and she was one of them. And she just simply had to wait there and exist until somebody came and helped her, because she couldn't physically get out of her home on her own. Now, what was that you were just complaining about? Well, they finished the milk off and put the empty jug back in the refrigerator. Oh, man, they ought to be arrested. You need to call the police right now. I'm thinking three strikes, you're out. Off to federal penitentiary for sure. I think you understand, as I do, we're already living in a promised land. It's just another day in paradise. It really is. God has so blessed us. The communists put up walls. Why do they put their walls up? To keep the people in. Because this is where they want to be. I remember way back when we were first learning about terrorists and so on. Even then, when they pulled these people that hated America, they wanted to live in America. Not just to blow us up. But because they understood, if you get to America, you got to the promised land. There's opportunity, there's wealth, there's plenty there. We really don't know what it's like to be hungry. Many of these people understand when they see these little faces looking up at them and they have nothing to feed them for the day. Boy, if we could get to America, even the poor people in America live so much better than the rich people in some other parts of the world. We're already in the promised land. If God got angry whenever people complained about the real hardships of crossing a desert, how do you think listening to people bellyache while living in a promised land affects him? I was thinking the other day about heat in our homes. It was pretty cold outside, as it is today. And I was a little chilly, you know, so I put a sweater. I wear a knit hat almost everywhere else other than in church. I have a cold head. Not a head cold, but a cold head. And God has not blessed me with hair, so he's blessed me with a knit hat. But, you know, I was outside walking the dog. I come in, I thought, oh, this is so nice. This is so nice. And I remember a missionary that was with us from Spain many years ago. He said, you know, we in America, we live in comfort. Comfort is very important to us. He said in Spain, because I'd ask him a question. He talked about their adobe homes and different things. And I said, well, what do they do for heat? And he looked at me kind of strange. He said, well, they have a little fireplace and, you know, this kind of thing. But in the winter, they're just cold. And they look at you as foreign as who would expect to be warm in the wintertime. You know, that's what happens. But you and I, we start with comfort, don't we? Shelter and being warm, and then we work from there. You know, that's one of our needs. But not so with a lot of people. We are living in a promised land, and God has blessed us. So all I have to do, if I'm cold, is pushy the little button on the wall. And I can go stand by the vent and go, ah. Or I can open up the oven and go, ooh, ah. I love when you go into the store and they've got that heater blasting by the front door. Those of you with hair, you can't appreciate this, I'm sure. But those of us who are bald, we just, oh, wow. It's like my back leg starts to go, you know. Oh, that's what I've been looking for. Oh, I just want to. Go ahead, Peach. You go ahead and shop. I'll just stand. I'll be right here when you get back out. Ah, oh, we are blessed. We're blessed. So how does God respond when we're,
he's got a better so-and-so than I do. They took my toy. I've had a bad week.
You think God ever gets upset about stuff like that? Have you noticed the increase in severe weather events in the United States over the last 20 years? Does 9/11 ring a bell? Or am I just complaining about people complaining this morning? Trust God.